I don't think this man needs any introduction. It is Kurt Letterman. This place would not run without Kurt. Not only does he keep the building going, he keeps the IT going, and keeps the coffee pots going. Good morning, Kurt.
Good morning.
So this morning, I thought I would give you an overview about how the building works. And my intent is to kind of show you some of the complexity about what goes on here. We may take like one short little field trip, but maybe not. We'll just see how time goes and then with the questions. Wrong button. Okay, so has anyone thought of this place as a maze? Okay, and why? Why is it that way?
It was added on.
Yes, exactly. Because this place was not built with one big master plan in mind. Actually, there was a master plan, and then the true story, the very first remodeling project following the initial one, just ignored that plan. Just said, no, we're going to go a different way. So this place started in 1960 with a sanctuary there, and then the little bit here that includes the bathrooms and the furnace room that heats all that. And that's where it started. And then actually what we know today as the office here and the library were completed like very shortly thereafter. Just about at the same time. And they were listed as a phase one and a phase two because they weren't sure if there was going to be enough money to finish it all, but it turned out there was, and they're all. So the thing we know formerly as the library was the original social hall, and that's why there's a little kitchenette in there. And then it served as the library for a while, and now it's just room 212, because that's what I decided to call it. And so those little chunks. And so the other interesting thing about, because the building was built in chunks like this, little pieces at a time, is each of them has their own furnace and their own thermostat, every one of these little squares. So let's see, after that, what came next? Actually, it looks like, so this little part over here, what we know today as the nursery, which is being remodeled now into the Family Resource Center, they actually built that in 1956 from scratch, where the Shell station is now, because our property used to include the Shell station, because 148th Avenue used to end at Lander Home Circle, where the top of the Shell station is. 148th used to end right there. And if you look at the map, the way 140th comes down and then it like angles in, well, that's because it used to go through all the way to down here at East Gateway. But 148 stopped kind of where the stoplight is right now by the Shell station. So a little later on, the city continued 148th down. It carved off that chunk of building. We sold it to what was then became the Shell station eventually. But it still had this little house on it, what we know as a nursery. And in this part was the sanctuary where Pastor Clinton gave his sermons. And then there's little classrooms on the back that were the Sunday school rooms. But that was sitting over there and where the Shell station was, and the Shell station owner didn't want it. He said, okay, I'll sell you this building for a dollar if you want it, but you have to come take it away. So we did. So we had it moved, picked up, set down over there, and that was in 1965. So it sat separate from the rest of the building for all that time and was used primarily, I think, as the nursery for all that time. From 65 until currently. And then, let's see, then they decided they needed a bigger fellowship hall in this room, so they built this little chunk where we're sitting now, the fellowship hall north, in 1972. And then, what comes next? Oh, 78, then they thought they needed a bigger sanctuary, so they extended it out 12 feet outer here, So in the current sanctuary, if you look where all the hardwood floor is and the beams, those beams used to be the outside wall. And then they just built up this extension all the way around here. And that's why that's all carpeted, because there's no hardwood floors or anything pretty. It's just plywood on those couple steps up. And then that was all added in 78. Then in 83, they decided they needed a little bigger fellowship hall. So they added just a little part here, not all the way to the end, just a little bit further, which also included this group of stairs into the courtyard here, and also the choir practice room was in there. And there may have been like another office down there. And just this little chunk in 1983. And then in 86, they decided they needed some more offices. So they built this section, which is the current part where Susan's office is and Mary's desk is. And then this inner part is where the big workroom, where the copier is. But this outer part, when they added those on, so that was an exterior wall at some point. And I have to keep all this in mind, because like when I'm going to hang things on a wall, and sometimes there's four layers of stuff. There's original wallboard, and then there's the external siding, and then they put new wallboard on this type of stuff. So that has always been fun. And then in 1999, we had the big remodel where we added the music room, new music room, and the tenant space that Eastside Pathways is currently in, and then this whole South Hall section with the youth room, the conference room, and all the classrooms downstairs. So as each of these new chunks got built on, they all got their own furnace, and so there are 14 thermostats through the building. They each have to control their own little area. So that is a major part of why, when I took on this job, that I decided, well, the 14 thermostats then leads to when we have meetings. Some church meetings, some committees meet once a month on the first Monday of the month at 7 p.m., but not on the second, third, or fourth, or fifth Mondays. Well, the thermostats, the old regular thermostats, probably like the one in your home, they only program a week at a time. So on the first Monday, I would have to go to those thermostats and add Monday night, turn on that Monday night. And then the following Monday, I'd have to go and tell it to not turn on that Monday night. And so I would have to visit like 14 thermostats every week. And I got pretty tired, as well as prone to errors. And groups would call in the middle of winter and say their room was really cold when they got there. So the intent of automating a lot of the building was to make it easier on me, as well as make it more foolproof on that. So in the old days, there was not a lot of effort to conserve utilities at all. Just water used to be cheap, and electricity used to be cheap, and they're less so, as well as more of a focus on conservation. And that we had those 14, what I say, only a little bit smart thermostats that they could have a week schedule at a time. So now I have pretty much automated the most of the important functions of the building, and with the primary goals of that to make it easier to operate, less intentional work, as well as to save money and save utilities and save energy. Okay, so how is all this green building automation controlled? There are building automation programs that commercial buildings, high-rises use, and these are really expensive and cost tens of thousands of dollars. And so when I was looking for something to help automate this building, I didn't really look at those. So I looked at what are called home automation programs, which are relatively inexpensive, but they have been doing the job for 20 plus years. Okay, so we have a PC that runs this $160 program, which I bought 20 years ago, and I've upgraded 3 times at half price to the new version for $80. So pretty inexpensive, all in all. And it has inputs. It goes out and it finds out the weather. So, for instance, this room this morning, I didn't have to tell it to turn the heat on because it knew it was a cold day outside, versus last Sunday morning, it was a hot day outside, so it had to turn to keep the cool in here. And all that happens automatically because it can go and find out the weather. And it has a little interface that can wirelessly talk to various devices throughout the building to turn them on and off. We'll get into that in a little bit. It's a specific protocol that's called Z-Wave. It can be used that lots of people sell different kinds of home automation devices. I also have Wi-Fi. There's some devices that communicate over Wi-Fi, and they're all talking to this little central computer. I have some devices that are plugged in to a network connection, and I have some devices that still use a serial device. So the kinds of devices all these things are set to control. Okay, the HVAC system in the sanctuary, those new things on the wall, they're controlled by this system. The water coolers, we have 2 of those. There's one in the office and one in the conference room. And it saves energy by being able to turn those off when the building's not occupied, because they keep water heated and cool, and no sense keeping that on all the time. The irrigation outside, all the sprinklers for all the shrubberies and such, and water heaters I've got, because again, helps to turn them off when nobody's in the building and nobody needs hot water. These sirens throughout, the little things that go off and you hear the police sign. Remember, if we hear that, we're going to run, hide, and fight. Remember, assuming that there's some kind of violent danger in the building. And thermostats, like I said, and doors, the outside doors with the keypad and the fobs can also be controlled by the computer to unlock or relock. Valves, I've got 1 water valve, because in 1960 they thought of a really good way to automate the urinals in the men's room, in the main men's room here. There's a water valve that just drips into a tank. And depending on if you can turn the water faster or slower for how much it drips, and depending on how fast the water drips, how long the tank takes to fill up, and then how often the urinals flush. Well, in 1960, I'm sure that seemed like that was really cool. But in 2022, with that thing going all the time, it's just flushing a lot of water down the drain because nobody's using the urinal at 2 a.m. on Saturday night. And little light switches, got a bunch of lights, also some buttons. Will has a button on the organ that will make the lights in the organ pipes go different colors. For instance, we've got these police buttons on the back wall there next to the thermostat, that blue button. If you push and hold that, it will activate these alarms, call 911, send the SWAT team here, lock down all the doors. It does all that by these blue buttons throughout the facility. Whoops, wrong way. And the most important piece of equipment in the St. Andrews building, which is what?
You.
No. Piece of equipment. Sherry already alluded to it.
The coffee pot.
Well, light bulbs and motion sensors and the coffee pots. That's right. different things, a lot of them I have automated through the computer. It wants me to stand here. Okay. So the particular name of the program I have is called Homeseer. Like I said, it's $169 if you buy it fresh. It's an inexpensive program for that amount. It runs on a low-powered PC. Until very recently, it was running on a Windows 7 PC, so you see it does not need to be any high power. It's a simple program, both in size as well as complexity. It has a long list of things you tell it to do, like I tell it on Sunday morning at, I think this room comes on about 4 a.m. Sunday morning at 4 a.m., if the high temperature outside is going to be 74 degrees or below, turn on the heat in here. So that's one of a long list of things I have told it to do. And it just sits there and cycles through all the things and says, okay, should I do any of these things now? Okay, no. Should I do any of these things now? Okay, how about now? And it just keeps cycling. So it's a pretty simple program. It is standards-based, so this turned out to be a good thing, all in all, because I'm still using the same program from 20 years ago and the same devices, which is kind of amazing in the world of technology if you think about it. Some of the light switches and plug-in things I bought 20 years ago, and they're still working in here. Now, there have been some upgrades, and the newer devices go a little faster and have some additional features, but the 20-year-old devices can still talk to the central computer and go on or off as necessary. Z-Wave is the radio. It's a wireless standard, so it's just like Wi-Fi. It's sending out radio signals throughout the house. It's the most popular, so if you were thinking about moving into home automation, I would recommend that. There's an alternative standard called Zigbee, but I would not recommend it because there's just fewer devices. And the neat thing about Z-Wave is I have devices from at least 10 different manufacturers, and they all talk to each other. They all talk together, and it's very easy to get a call. And this particular program, Homeseer, is extremely customizable. So I'll show you what it looks like here in a little bit. You don't have to do any programming. You can just tell it, like the example I said, if it's Sunday morning at 4 a.m. and the high temperature for the day is 74 degrees or less, turn on the heat in the fellowship hall door. And you can just do all that with your graphical interface. If you want to get more complex, you can actually write some scripts that will do other things. And for instance, I have one that does more complex things that throughout the building here, you can always go up to a thermostat and adjust it. And every night at 9:30 p.m., this whole building shuts down. Everything goes to back to default values. So you can always go and adjust it. But I have a program that is not going to let you go crazy on the thermostat. So one of the things, the program, every time the thermostat gets changed, the little program runs and it makes sure that it doesn't go above 72. So if you try and set 75, a little bit later the program will say, no, I'm not going to allow that, and it puts it back to 72. And this became especially important because the shelter guys in here, they like to turn it up to 99. Because that's as high as they would go. And it took me a couple days. I'd come in the next morning and look at the graphs and say, wow, what happened there? Well, they really like it warm in here. So I have I've worked out a compromise with them about, I'll let it go a little higher. I think maybe 72, like all night long, because by default I would turn it down to like 68 for nighttime if there are people sleeping in here, but let it go to 72 all night long because they really like that, but not 99. So. And like I walked through, you can set up all kinds of complex logic even without programming, does it mean? Okay, so if you're going to implement home automation at your own home, it's important to keep your WAF in mind when you're doing this. Anyone want to hazard a guess what that is? Okay, so I follow some forums, online bulletin boards of the Homeseer program where I want, and they always talk about the WAF in there.
That's the Women's Air Force.
Okay, it could be, it's similar. It's the wife acceptance factor. And in the online bulletin boards, they just say, well, you know, the WAF, I couldn't do this thing I wanted to do because of the WAF. So the key to doing that, and I know this from my own home, that you have to make the whole thing easy to understand and easy to operate and the ability to have local control and override it if you want. So even though I tell these thermostats every night at 9:30, every thermostat in the building goes down to 55 degrees, and then the next morning only certain ones of them turn on, because I don't need the whole building because people aren't in the whole building, you can always walk up to a thermostat and you can turn the temperature up anytime, and just know that at 9:30 at night it's going to go back down. So,
to 72 degrees.
To 72.
You can only turn up to 72 degrees.
Yeah, you're right. You can only turn up to 70. Well, for that program, it takes about 30 seconds for it to kick in. So it depends on how fast you walk away from it.
I gotta stay there if I want to keep it at 75.
Yeah, right. Every 3 seconds,
keep punching the button.
Correct. That's right.
It's good today. That's a place to be.
So,
it's like you've had some practice.
That.
I've also built the WAF.
Have you? Yes.
So, I have some home automation at home, yeah.
Exactly. So, I don't have any at my home because I'm not allowed to. because of that. But our vacation house, it just makes it so easier because I'm not there. And it's especially nice in the winter when we're going to be able to turn the thermostat on before we leave Bellevue even.
And it's nice.
It's very nice to get to a house in the snow that's already warm. So I dabbled with it a little bit. But the wife acceptance factor is important, just as it is here, to make sure you have an easy to operate and understand system. There. Okay, so in summary, if you're going to be doing home automation on yourself, you want to look at why. Why are you trying to do it? And for instance, even though I'm a geek on this stuff, I don't have any at home because, I don't really need it because I'm always there. Versus St. Andrews, I try not to be here 24/7, so I want these things to operate on their own. Choosing standards, like I said, I would make sure you use some general, there are some proprietary programs and things out there that will only use certain hardware and only use certain things, and you're just not sure that they're going to be around forever. And does the hardware investment make sense? So I have only automated things in here that in my mind make sense to me. So for instance, these main lights, especially I put them in when they were incandescent bulbs, and they took a lot of electricity. So I automated these, but like the four little lights on the side, they don't draw that much electricity. So if someone leaves them on overnight, the ones over the coffee pot area there, and I'm not sure it's worth a $40 specialized switch just to be able to control those. So you have to make those kinds of decisions. Okay. And then just to show you a little bit what this looks like. So this is the program, and for instance, this here, here's the lights outer in this room, and I can turn that, and then they go off. And so we'll look at the center lights. Or center lights. Because these are actually on a dimmer, I can set them to like a third, like that, a little bit dim. And these are also tied in, and then here's the thermostat. Where I think, if I do it this way, well, see, they won't even go above 72. But you'll see, it's on 72 right now. It says it's idle. So in a minute, that'll actually change to heating. That'll show you that the furnace is actually running right now. And then it's also tied in with the motion sensors. Oops. Laptop's a little funny. That there's these two motion sensors, one there and then one above the back door. Turn the lights back on. So these two motion sensors are tied in to just, again, trying to save a little bit more electricity. If there's been no motion in this room for 30 minutes, as opposed to both of those, the lights shut off. So even if someone came in earlier and turned them on, it also is nice because they work to turn the lights on. If there has been no motion for a while, and just someone walking in that door or someone walking in this door, motion senses them and the lights turn on, so you don't have to walk through a dark room potentially. And then as long as someone keeps moving in front of one of these two motion sensors every 30 minutes, the lights will stay on. But then if there's no motion on either of them, they go off. That's the complex world of St. Andrew's building running itself. Any questions?
What's the range of the Z-Wave? Do they have a single?
Oh, the range of Z-Wave, typically you have one in one controller thing that plugs into your control computer. In a normal size house, we'll be able to cover the whole house. In this particular building, I have actually five of them because it's kind of the way it's spread out. So there's one like near the nursery, there's one in the office, there's one in this closet, there's one downstairs in the south hall.
Is Z-Wave a mesh network? Or?
Yeah, it's mesh.
It is. Okay, so the difference there, of course, is you can have one, and as long as you have something else nearby, it'll pop the signal. So Z-Wave devices, it's just you can't have them too spread out from each other, but you could, in theory, have one, and as long as you have a consistent chain. It's not going to be a terribly consistent signal.
One, so that's the theory, is that, yes, that every time any device sees a message like, okay, the center lights in Fellowship Hall turn on, any device sees that message, they rebroadcast it, and it jumps around the network. I have found that to be less reliable. Yeah. Also, it doesn't work as well. So I make sure that every device can talk directly to a controller. And the controllers can be on the network. So the five I have in the whole building here, four of them are on networks. Oh, and then one in the sanctuary. That was it. I knew there was a fifth. They're on a network, and only one is directly connected to the controller PC. But in a typical house, one should do it. I lived on one for a long time here, but...
What if your density is higher? Because, like, your typical house footprint is probably no bigger than the sanctuary.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it stretches a little bit depending on your floor plan.
But it depends on how many walls in between.
Yeah, walls will cause signal attrition if you've got more devices. Because I imagine each of your devices, you said it's all the light switches.
Yeah.
You can get, I think Zigbee and Z-Wave also make individual light bulbs sometimes.
Yeah.
So you can buy those if you don't want to replace the switch. Now they're more expensive. But then
they're
more higher density. So it's like, if you put every light switch, for example, on the system, and all those light switches in your house are fairly compact and condensed, one is going to cover it, even if there's a little bit of a stretch from wherever your control unit initial places, because it will hop the signal, but there's latency.
Yeah, so the system is relatively inexpensive, like I said. So the software is $160, light switch is like $40. This control thing it plugs in is like $40. So nothing's too expensive. John, you had a question?
Oh, I was just going to say, it seems like, if you happen to be during the week or at the weekend and something comes up, you're able to go in and make adjustments.
It has happened.
Yeah. So I think that's really one of the nice features.
Yeah.
You don't have to drive all the way back here.
Right. I can log in remotely to this and control stuff if I need to. So,
and if all you want to do is automate your like thermostat, for example, it'll cost you a little bit more, but you can get, there's a few different thermostats that are smart thermostats, like the Nest system, and those you can also typically, like, if all you want to do is make sure that when you show up at your vacation house, it's heated, or when you're coming back from vacation, you know, that your house is not freezing, you know, then you get one of those, and they also have an app that you can just get on your phone, and, you know, turn the heat when you're on the plane.
Yeah.
This is meant to be humorous, but do you have something that can make warm water in the ladies' room?
Not any of this. But I will tell you, you're not being discriminated against. The men's room also has no hot water. And that's because that part of the building, being the oldest, those restrooms were built in 1960. They use galvanized pipe, which is the kind that gets all rusty inside and little bitty trickles and then goes down. And the only way to be able to get that flow going is to repipe that part. I actually have pipes, I just haven't, on my priority list of things, crawling in the crawl space to run all the new pipe is about medium. Yeah, and that's what's going on. It's just, it's still using really old galvanized pipes that don't provide very much flow. And so basically, no matter how long you leave that faucet on, it will never get warm. It'll get maybe a little more than the cold, but it won't really get hot, even though the water heater is just off the men's room right there. So it's not very far, and it's turned up as high as it could go already. So.
You
still
have
one
in the
sacristy. In the
sacristy,
back.
Yes.
There is still.
Yes.
Underneath, there's a little bitty water heater under the sink in the sacristy. Actually, it's not a water heater. It's an on-demand. So rather than keeping, it's not a tank. It's an on-demand. So when you turn the water on, it turns on electric heaters that heat the water real time. Just for the sacristy, though. The big water heater here controls all of that, the office, the kitchen, the sacristy here.
Well, Kurt, thank you so much.
Well, there's a little bit about St. Andrew's words.
You may never leave.
I wrote all this down in a book. So there's a book about how to run this program. Okay, well, thank you for your attention.
Kurt, I have one question. And I may have missed it. How many bathrooms are there in
there? There's something like 10 bathrooms. There are 21 toilets. This I know off the top of my head. plus 5 urinals. And I counted the doors one time. I remember there's something like 300 doors in this building. So it's a big place.
Thank you.